Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Thea, and today I'm joined by Peter Willey. We'll talk about his book, Lead with AI, Stay Human, How Modern Leaders Orchestrate Enterprise Value. Peter is the founder of Elevate Potential, a consultancy that helps organizations to elevate human potential in the AI age. He was previously a partner at EY. Lead with AI, Stay Human is a practical blueprint for people-first transformation, showing how leaders can turn AI disruption into competitive advantage by orchestrating human and artificial intelligence to compound potential and create sustainable enterprise value. Hi, Peter. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast. How are you today?
Oh, really well. Thank you very much for having. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, me too. So my first question is, what inspired you to write Lead with AI, Stay Human? And why did you feel this was a book that was needed now?
Okay, yeah, there's a lot in there to unpack. So I think there are a few reasons. I have been a consultant for nearly 30 years, and I have seen all sizes of organization go through various forms of transformation. Some well, others not quite so well. And I think, you know, going through the digital transformation sort of period and then into the AI era, as we're now calling it, I've watched certain trends, I think, start. And really the two divergent paths that have become very clear is one, firms who are looking at automation first approaches, where they're looking to maximize efficiency, reduce costs, and therefore AI has got a use case in those scenarios. And then the other side is more of a people first approach, where companies are prioritizing people, are really thinking about how they can elevate the potential of their employees and capture enterprise value long-term by using AI. And I think, you know, with my own situation as well, I saw that hitting the consulting world. I was working for one of the big four consulting firms, and I saw a lot of the work that we did actually being quite meaningless and losing a lot of value because AI could do that work almost immediately. Whether it's a change in comms plan, whether it's a strategy document, whether it's an analysis of huge volumes of data. And the consulting firm hadn't adapted to the change. And it certainly, from a leadership perspective, hadn't really thought through how do they lead the organization through that transformation. And then added to that, I think if we look at the last 3 years of AI automation and transformation projects, anywhere between 70 and 95% of those projects have failed to return a return on investment for the organizations. Huge amounts of money have been invested, and there hasn't actually been value created as a result of that. So I felt very strongly, you know, about trying to understand why statistics like that existed, why, you know, we're seeing, as I mentioned, the one path of firms like Salesforce, IBM, Nestle, Microsoft, you know, reducing headcount significantly, and then others investing in AI and not seeing enterprise value. You know, what are the differences between these two sort of divergent approaches? Why are so many transformation projects failing to return that ROI? And when I looked into it, it was almost always to do with people, with leadership, with rebuilding some of the foundations that made those companies what they are today. But AI is completely changing some of those foundations. So yeah, that was the reason. I think some of the, you know, the urgency that you talk about is the speed of the change. I think advantage now is transient. I think it's you can't rely on competitive advantage like perhaps you used to. I'm seeing, you know, hierarchies really begin to flatten in many companies. And the other thing that I think is a trend is the the silos and the vertical functions that exist in many corporations are beginning to converge. So yeah, I guess that's the background to why I wrote this. I saw the market change, I saw the need for leadership to change, and felt really passionate about trying to do something about that change.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. The more we adopt AI, the more we see the need to change the way we operate. But before we talk more about that, and because this is your first book, Peter, could you share with us what surprised you the most during the writing process? Was it something to do with the AI era leadership, or something about yourself to develop the book?
Definitely both. I mean, I think let me start with myself. I've gone through a huge change in terms of myself, my own journey. I mentioned earlier I've been sort of consulting for 30 years. I've always been given more responsibility, bigger teams, larger projects. And my success has always resulted in sort of this self-fulfillment of speed, of having to do more, to have better answers. And AI has really sort of compounded that speed. And the organization, the consulting firm I was working for, went through a pretty drastic reorganization. Dealt with incredibly poorly from a people perspective. And I found myself at a position where I needed to reimagine myself. And having been used to running, always making, fast decisions and having to firefight all the time, I think the writing process was incredibly cathartic. I had to stop, I had to pause, I had to reflect, I had to, and I was able to spend the time to learn. So I think I found the process incredibly challenging at the beginning. And actually in the book, one of the chapters is about the head, heart, gut, or what I talk about as the guidance center, which is the heart, and the action center, which is more of the head. And I have traditionally been reliant a little bit more on the head and that action center and the doing. And the writing process was very much about taking the step back, the reflection, the interviews, the analysis of the conversations that I was having, what are the core themes that I'm hearing, the research behind all of that. And it really forced me to take a step back and think about the reader. Not necessarily just achieving the goal in a particular deadline. So hugely impactful on myself. And I think from an AI perspective as well, it was a good challenge for me to really understand what is happening in the market, where are the changes happening, and then what is the consequence of those changes from a technology perspective into organizations, leaders, teams, and overall leadership itself. So I think the research into the topic was incredibly interesting and fulfilling. I think I've learned a huge amount, and give credit to all of the contributors who I interviewed as part of as part of the work, because I've learned from them as well. And I think together we've created a book that I alone couldn't have created. So yeah, it's been an incredibly enjoyable, rewarding, and fulfilling process, actually.
Well, it's great to hear that. I know it could be a very hard work to write a whole book, so I'm happy to hear it was so rewarding for you.
It was definitely harder work than I expected, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and then now let's talk about the book and what you cover in it, starting with could you explain to us how AI is changing the core work of leadership and which aspects of traditional leadership remain essential?
Yeah, I think we hear lots of AI is being overhyped, or others saying, "Oh, it's underhyped, and actually you should panic a lot more." And so there's sort of this utopian view and dystopian view, and sort of two extremes that come. I think the truth is somewhere in between. AI, without doubt, is shifting everything that we have historically understood, everything about ways of working, knowledge, data, the way that we even consider our own identity. What makes particularly white-collar workers unique is our knowledge and our ability to use that knowledge to make decisions. And I think if you go back to the Industrial Revolution, the change that we saw there with the printing press and farming and everything else that happened with automation of production lines, that impacted traditionally the blue-collar workers, the more manual type of work. And that's what makes AI so unique, is that it is changing knowledge workers so fundamentally. But I think when from a leadership perspective, the universal truths are still going to be important, if not more important. So things like judgment, empathy, curiosity, integrity, vision, these for me are universal truths for leadership. And really what's happening is AI's automating the processes, the tasks, so basically the speed of everything. We're seeing frontier firms come from nowhere and destabilizing incredibly robust and seemingly secure organizations, and their business models just can't change as quickly. So decision making is changing, information flow is changing, the hierarchies are changing, and therefore the way that decisions are made need to change. And I think one of the biggest shifts is really around this move from control. And therefore, that sort of comes into hierarchy, which is I know I'm more senior, therefore I make the decision. And AI changes that because knowledge is a commodity now. It's disseminated across everybody. I can be a lawyer one day, I can be a doctor the next day, I can then find out how to code. And that's the skill and the capability that AI brings to everyone. So what does that mean to a leader? It really challenges a leader for how their personal identity is considered, how they lead a team, and then how they actually lead their team or function within the organization also changes. So yeah, maybe we can spend some time later on in this talk through some of the four conductor capabilities. But what I've done is I've looked in at the core universal truths. And then I've converted those into what I'm calling the four conductor capabilities. And those are the silver thread through the entire book that I think are fundamental to help leaders evolve into this new era.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking forward to discussing those. But before you do that, Peter, you've worked with many leaders across different industries. So, based on your experience, what are the biggest identity, coordination, and human capability challenges that leaders are facing as AI accelerates?
I think the fundamental truth I just touched on a little bit actually is this role of what made me great, what made me get to this point in my life, in my career, in my business, is no longer good enough to get us to where we need to be. So that the legacy knowledge, legacy role, that is being reframed as a result of AI. And that the sort of the line and file controller is moving much more towards a what I call a conductor or an orchestrator. And orchestration is, imagine, a traditional orchestra in a music context. The conductor is the person who is making that music sound wonderful and beautiful and in time. And I don't believe that a functional leader who is maybe the best, or the leader of their particular function, whether it's HR, legal, risk, finance, whatever the function might be, they need to step out of the thinking of isolated, siloed thinking and really think about how their decisions cross borders and boundaries. And that's where orchestration comes in, because AI automates end-to-end process from customer order through to delivery. And AI doesn't care about HR, finance, legal, and so on. Those functions don't hold the same value that they used to. So yeah, identity, coordination, and the capabilities that I as a leader need are therefore changing. And I think you asked around, AI acceleration as part of that question, which, the speed of change we can't actually cope, keep up with. New models are becoming, doubling in capabilities. It's something like every 3 to 4 months. So how can we stay relevant when the speed of change is so significant? And that's where I believe that people can move from fear to empowerment, where I then say, okay, I am going to make it my role, my task, my responsibility to empower myself, to learn, to push those boundaries rather than rely on what made me get to this particular point. And so I think, yeah, I said it before, what was relevant before is no longer relevant. It's all about speed of change and using knowledge to help us elevate our own potential with AI rather than thinking AI is going to do everything for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that leads very nicely to the four conductor capabilities that you mentioned earlier, which also sit at the heart of the book. So could you walk us through what those capabilities are and why they define effective leadership in the AI era?
Yeah, absolutely happy to. So I mentioned earlier around the universal sort of leadership truths, which as I say, are still vital. Let's take judgment. Judgment has always been important as a leader. How do I make the right decision? How do I decide and then tell people what to do? And I think that's then, and just take this one as an example, that under AI speed, where uncertainty is continual, where change is happening faster than I can predict, where decisions are being made on data, and I don't know the data quality. I don't know where that data is coming from, but AI is telling me this is the answer. So for me, the conductor capability moves just purely from judgment to judgment under ambiguity. So how can I have clarity of thought when there is uncertainty? And that's one of the four conductor capabilities. And it's all around from knowing and doing to sensing and making things happen. The other conductor capabilities are, let's take trust. Again, trust has always been vitally important in isolation. In the old world, perhaps pre-COVID, that was very much built in person. That is now scaling faster again than we can imagine. The systems are changing, the people I need to connect with, collaborate with, and coordinate with, whether it's human or AI, is also changing. So that for me has become trust stewardship. How do we make trade-offs visible as we're thinking about automation? So how do I have conversations and bring confidence at scale rather than just within my team or the people I'm very connected with? Because my decisions need to travel across the entire organization. So how can we, with all the complexity at an organizational level, how do we really become stewards of that trust? So that we can move from the head of finance has made this decision, therefore we're going to do it, to, well, the head of finance has made a decision that is made based on the understanding of how that decision impacts sales, how it impacts supply chain and operations, because that decision has a level of trust stewardship that comes with it that's not just for that function. And that is part of the move towards enterprise value and orchestration that I talk about. Learning, I think, is another critical one. We've always known learning has been important, In the book, I actually tell a story how I was responsible at one of my previous organizations for the learning at Lehman Brothers, an investment bank. And Lehman Brothers, we had a learning management system with learning content, and every single one of the traders, the risk managers, the desk heads, they'd all done their mandatory learning. They'd all ticked the box on the training, let's call it, that they had to do. So they were compliant. But the reality was it didn't change behaviors. And that for me is what the difference between training and learning. And in the conductor capabilities, I talk about adaptive learning, which is about growing capability faster than complexity is happening to us. So the change externally, the change to the environment, the change with our competition, that is constantly impacting our organization. So how from an organizational level can we move towards systemic learning, where the organization learns together and you've made a mistake, so you tell me about it. That's okay. I need to learn from your mistakes rather than you've made a mistake, you're going to be fired or you're not going to get your bonus. And that's the old school world, which leads to compliance instead of this adaptive learning within the organization that allows value to grow from learning from mistakes and learning from each other. And that all comes together with what I call enterprise orchestration. That really was in the past was sort of defined as integrity and having some vision and being able to lead in my particular function. But actually now I really talk about aligning my decisions to create enterprise value. So using judgment under ambiguity, using trust stewardship, having learning that is constantly adaptive and evolving, and then making those decisions, thinking about enterprise value, regardless of the function that the decision is going to be made in. And all of those four conductor capabilities come together to create this enterprise value or a level of flow in the organization. And of course, trust being, critically important, so that I can trust you have made the right decision because you know that your success is also my success. And that is really moving to sort of a level of shared ownership, which I think is fundamentally important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the next logical question is, well, how do we build those capabilities? And in the book, you've got your SPAR framework. So that framework has four stages. So strengthen, partner, amplify, and reshape. So can you share with us how those four stages work together as a developmental journey?
Yep, very happy to. So I've just talked about the conductor capabilities. So they are fundamental, like I said, the silver thread through everything that I need to do. But as a leader, I also need to think about how I'm developing myself and developing the team in the organization. So SPAR really was that framework from individual to team to enterprise. So how do I make myself better? How do I, because nothing else can happen until you've worked on yourself. So that's, of course, the starting point. So strengthen is really looking at what was my identity and what do I need to do to change that identity now that functional expertise is less important, and that it's more towards enterprise value. So how does my reasoning in judgment and decision making need to change? How do I need to really think about my growth from a learning perspective, how I lead myself and how I'm perceived by others? And really thinking about, empowering others through my capability. So it's not just me making a decision, it's me as a leader of others. So a real steward of leadership is somebody who builds other people rather than themselves. So the strengthen part of the book is really thinking through what is changing and how do you evolve as a leader by confronting those changes, and then what are some of the growth areas that you need to think about. And in that section, I talked a little bit about building sort of three particular areas, which were judgment, connection, and vision. So how do I use my knowledge and judgment and AI also to make better judgment, to connect my decision with others, and to then think about how I can communicate that with the right vision. But then also to think about some of the things that I need to let go of as a leader. So I need to be able to release control, and I need to be able to release a pride that I used to have in my decision capabilities, and thinking that I was the one who knew and could make the right decision. Of course, there's a pride in being involved, but that can't scale. So Strengthen really talks about that. Partnering with intelligence, I talk a lot about artificial ignorance, and that's something I see quite a lot happening, where people outsource their knowledge and capability and thinking to AI. They get a quick response. Sounds amazing, great, cut and paste, and we've seen plenty of very publicly embarrassing situations where consultancies and other organizations have automatically generated, AI good-looking answers, but are actually fundamentally flawed with errors and mistakes. And so how do we avoid artificial ignorance? It's about using AI effectively to empower yourself to learn, and I talk about a sparring partner. So thinking of it as somebody like in a boxing ring that you are making yourself faster, fitter, stronger, quicker, and rather than just taking the first answer, challenging yourself to think about how you prompt differently, how you use AI differently, and think about the question being more important than the answer. Using different voices. So I've got this decision I need to make. This is my recommendation. Now, what is the potential impact of this decision on people? What is the potential consequence of this 3 years down the line if this is what happens with the market, or this is what happens with competition, or this is what happens to, X, Y, and Z? And using those responses to make your thinking more robust. So that's really the partner with intelligence section. And then we move on to the A, which is amplify. And that's all about amplifying team capability. So as I talked about, making others better, thinking about how your decision flows through the organization and how the judgment that you have needs to be, you need to consider the trade-offs of other people and other functions. So it's very much about using human and AI collaboration, and thinking about how capability can compound within an organization and amplify growth within a business. Make sure that we are listening to the right people who are typically closer to the customer, and using the various trade-offs, because what might be good for finance might not necessarily be good for the commercial side or the sales side of the business. So there's always trade-offs. And I think, again, moving away from that controller towards more of an orchestrator, we need to think about amplifying the capability of everyone so that we all get a better outcome for the business. I touch on a little bit around performance metrics and reward, because if we give people performance metrics based on individual, performance, of course, the business is never going to move to what I think truly is amplification. But I think that's a particular topic that does need to be thought about in many companies. And then finally, the reshape for flow. And the flow part is where an organization can move towards this enterprise value and shared ownership. And as I touched on earlier, it's that we know that we are collectively making the right decisions because you've worked on your own identity, you have used AI correctly, you have thought about how your decisions flow across the organization. So now there's a level of trust, there's a level of design in the business that's not hierarchical, but it's much more transformative and fluid. so that we can think about sequential handoffs like synchronized swimming rather than swimming in individual lanes, everyone doing their own thing. And in this section of the book, I have a very one of the chapters which is interesting is with Howard Yu from IMD Business School, where he spent 10 years looking at what is readiness for transformation. And then in the last chapter, I do a two case studies actually of organizations that have started to reshape for flow. So really trying to make it practical in the book about how all of these things come together, and then what does that actually look like in highly functioning or preparing to be highly functioning organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Peter, that framework sounds like a very practical tool to build those capabilities to be able to lead in AI era. But we know many organizations, they want to implement AI, but don't yet have the leadership operating model to support it. So what shifts do leaders and organizations experience when they begin to use the SPAR framework and the conductor capabilities?
So it's the tools are there as guides. They're there to help people to think through where they are now, where they need to be in the future. And SPAR certainly, as you mentioned, is a framework, what I call an operating system that needs to underpin everything. But it's much more than just a set of tools. This is really trying to experience a shift within individuals, teams, and companies to move away from reactive firefighting. We've got a problem. We need to fix this. A customer has just said this, or our IT system has just gone down. How do we fix that fire? And I think leaders often don't have the space and the capacity to move beyond the firefighting because they are under huge amounts of pressure. But with AI speeding up everything with more data, more knowledge, more information accessible, unfortunately, that rate of change is happening. So I think AI does need to be used for some of the automation of the tasks and processes, and that should give leaders this the more of the space that they need to think strategically, to think about the connection, to use those conductor capabilities to join some of the dots together that they didn't have space for. So the outcome of all of that should be moving the organization from these fragmented responses in silos much more towards this adaptive, free-flowing organization, which I also think needs to be human-centered. I interviewed two CHROs actually in one of the chapters, one from Mars and one from Syngenta, and the chapter was all about how do you lead transformation without losing trust, and that's the theme through the entire book, which is maintaining trust despite difficult decisions, despite speed, despite ambiguity and uncertainty. This is all about improving decision making, relying on the innately human capabilities that we have, and using AI where value can also be added. And it's not one or the other, it's seeing both hand in hand. And that really is the experience I'm hoping leaders will get the book get from the book. And this is much more, as I say, than just a list of tools or a list of things you need to do. What I've tried to weave in through the stories of the business leaders that I interviewed was to use real life scenarios to share some of their stories so that you can then apply it to yourself as a leader, so that you can start to bring in decision clarity more frequently, that you can try to stabilize trust in your team, in the business, that coordination should improve across the whole company, and that this continual drive towards capability growth, that we're building that future for individuals as AI is removing part of those roles. And there is no doubt that AI is going to replace many roles and certainly many parts of existing roles. And that just means that we need to guide people through that change. And that's again was is a large part of what I want leaders to experience from this is to become that steward of trust in the organization to make capability compound, to use AI to make better decisions, and to help to build trust, which I think is a key aspect of long-term sustained growth for a company. And back to what I talked about earlier, which was around the sort of the divergent paths of those who are just optimizing for cost efficiency, they're losing all of that innately human capability. And yes, they might use AI to automate, but what is that going to mean to empathy, to ingenuity and innovation, creativity, and some of the things that and connected decision making that humans can do? So that should be the outcome from the book, really thinking about orchestration of my value as a leader.
Yeah, absolutely. And to achieve all of that, you emphasize in the book that the SPAR framework is not just a one-off framework or a project, but a continual adaptive rhythm. So, what does that practice look like for leaders and their teams?
Absolutely. So yeah, leadership is constantly evolving. And again, sort of just to touch on the point around AI, that is making that speed of evolution even quicker. Whether it's finance or IT, every single function, every single role is changing. So we can't just say, okay, I've applied the framework, therefore I'm a good leader. Now let's move on. This really is about continuous adaptation, and really seeing where AI and the AI's capability and capacity is moving. The chip power, the speed that decisions can be made, the volume of data that can be assessed, certainly at an organizational level, how do we take that organizational knowledge, and then continuously adapt based on what is happening externally and with competitors and so on. I think again, sort of collective alignment, maybe sort of touching on the orchestration theme. I think that is something that is continually going to change because we are human, and humans we take longer to change and evolve, and that's absolutely normal. In one of the chapters, I talk about the three different clocks in an organization. One being the strategy clock, one operations, and then the third being the people clock. And the people clock is the slowest. So we can make strategy, we can apply that to our operations and our way of working, but people take time. People take time to understand the change, to learn, to grow, and to function within that new change. And I think that's then that sort of continual adaptive rhythm that we as leaders need to think about. How do we coordinate those three clocks and bring that collective alignment? Learning I've talked about, but that's continually evolving. I talk about learning debt and how the speed of change is now faster than most organizations can cope with. So we are having a learning debt in most companies. So how do you improve that? I talked about the systemic learning early, but that's one of the critical topics. One of my guest collaborators was Amy Edmondson. It was absolutely incredible working with Amy. She, of course, is known for a number of books, but the topics typically are around psychological safety. Her latest book is Fearless Organizations, but that is helping people to speak up, to say their views, but to create an environment where that can happen, which is psychologically safe. Where people can sense make, they can think, they can manage in the uncertainty, and without being ruled by typically old hierarchies where mistakes are punished. And I think that's a constant evolution as well, to create the psychologically safe environment to learn from mistakes. And again, that's not a once and done type activity. So yeah, it is a continual evolution. So a lot of my work is with leaders and teams. It could be one-on-one, it could be with the group of leaders, as well as a wider group of the leaders and the people that they are connecting with to really start building through some of those capabilities that we've talked through.
Yeah, absolutely. And Peter, I think everything we've talked about today, it's really fascinating and very interesting. But for some of the leaders who might be listening to us now, they might be really overwhelmed with AI and its implication and how they use it in their organizations. And they might be thinking, well, where do I start with all of this? So my last question to you today is, for those leaders who feel very overwhelmed, what's the first thing they can do to begin transitioning from leadership with control to one of orchestration?
I think the first thing I'll say is fear is absolutely normal. We are human. I think the impact that we're seeing is far happening faster than we could have imagined. We are ever connected to news feeds and posts that are constantly telling us about restructuring, how jobs are going to be disappearing. And that sort of dystopian view of the future is prominent in many things that we are fed. And so I think the fear is natural. But rather than being driven by that fear, what I'm advocating is the evolution of our own capability, the elevating our potential. So learning, being curious, pushing boundaries, and thinking through the fact that my role is changing. My identity has to change, and that's fine. And people who've got the openness to do that, then fear is unlocked. Because I know I am a software engineer and I know coding can be automated, that's okay, because my job moves upwards. It moves to something that is allowing me to be much more of the judge of the code, to think through the value of this, to think through the customer need, to think through the end result of what we're trying to create. And are we going in the right direction rather than just automating for speed? So I think it really is about embracing the change and being part of the evolution, being comfortable with the fact that things are being destabilized and that change is happening. And rather than thinking, well, AI is going to replace me, thinking, how can I add value that AI cannot? And I think that's sort of part of the move of orchestration as well. Using AI as the sparring partner, which I talked about, rather than just outsourcing my knowledge. So I'm making myself smarter and better and asking better questions rather than just relying on output. And I think, as a leader, you've also got a responsibility to be that steward of others and just to be very understanding that everyone is going through the same experience at the moment, certainly in sort of companies are more of a lot of the white collar, but also the blue collar roles and the work that are constantly evolving. So knowing that trust in all layers, all seniorities is fragile, and thinking through as a leader how you can encourage trust and create a safe space to build that trust. So yeah, I think in summary, it's helping yourself and helping others relieve some of the pressure that's coming from AI. If redundancies happen, if roles changed, okay, that's okay. I need to reimagine myself. So it's constantly being adaptive. I think, yeah, being willing to unlock collective intelligence. So not relying on my own intelligence, but collective with human and AI. Adaptability, I've talked about, constantly recognizing that change is normal and being willing to create a new culture within the organization. So that creates a much more utopian view to the future, but one that is just changing and evolving. And it's not one that we expected to see, certainly, less than 3 years ago. This has happened to us very, very quickly. So yeah, it's being comfortable with ambiguity, I think.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Peter, and thank you for this very interesting conversation. I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of Lead with AI, Stay Human, so they can read more about the conductor capabilities, the SPAR framework, and all of your other insights. But thank you very much for your time today.
You're very welcome. Really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.